So I'm thinking we can run through this without a problem. Okay, so let's look at the Delisle case. It's a nice, simple little car accident. And we'll see if we can use it just to master the fundamental concept. And then we'll take a look at the other two cases in the hypo sheet. So Delisle. I just randomly harass someone who hasn't got a highlight, probably because I forgot to highlight them. Miss Ballin, you don't have a highlight. So what happened?
The plaintiff was driving and had stopped at a stop sign, looked up a lot in distance both ways. He didn't see anything, so he drove into the intersection. Halfway through, he was struck on his side by Alicia Rahami Mack.
Alicia, yep.
Alicia testified she was 10 to 15 feet away when she saw the plaintiff's car approaching the stop sign. From 14 feet behind it, she attempted to swerve, but she couldn't avoid the collision. She stated she was required to wear prescription glasses for being nearsighted, but wasn't wearing them at the time of the collision.
Okay, so the jury listens to all this, and who does the jury find was at fault?
The trial court had found that the plaintiff was the only one negligent, but the...
Right, so the jury goes for the plaintiff, right? And so the defendant appeals and argues something was procedurally wrong in the trial court. So what is the objection that the plaintiff is raising on appeal? She said, what should the trial court have done?
The plaintiff appeals claiming the court erred in refusing to charge Mack with negligence per se for violating that she had a restriction and wasn't wearing glasses.
Okay. So the plaintiff claims there should have been a negligence per se instruction. Based on what statute? So negligence per se, you're always finding some kind of criminal statute or administrative regulation. So what statute does the plaintiff want to use as the foundation for negligence per se?
The Vehicle and Traffic Law 509.
Right, New York's Vehicle and Traffic Law, right? So it's probably a misdemeanor to drive around without your glasses on. So she's trying to use this criminal statute to be the foundation of negligence per se. Okay, and did you find any definition or rule about negligence per se that you could share?
Yeah, it was an unexcused violation of a statutory standard of care, unexplained, constitutes negligence per se.
There it is, right? An unexcused violation is negligence per se. Okay, and you can also see that same concept in the first note that Cardozo does. Okay, so we have some kind of rule that violating a statute is negligence per se. If unexcused, is negligence per se. What does the plaintiff get if she gets negligence per se? So let me ask you this way. Did she get to introduce the evidence about the plaintiff not wearing glasses in the original trial? Really? How do you know about it? Did she get to put it in? Answer? Yes, she got to put, you can put the evidence in about not wearing glasses. It's pretty clear the evidence about the plaintiff not, the defendant not wearing glasses came in the original case. So what is the advantage you get if the plaintiff gets the negligence per se instruction? So what is it you get? Why is it plaintiff really wants the negligence per se instruction? Yep. You don't have to do breach at all. Oh, what's that? So you're right. It's a nice shortcut on duty breach. What does it give you? What do you have to prove if you're going for negligence per se? Yep. So that's to get the statute to work, and we'll get to that in a minute. But suppose we went back down with a negligence per se instruction, right? What would the jury have to decide? Nothing on breach? Or would they still have to decide something?
That they breached the statute.
That they violated the statute. And what was the evidence that the case heard before?
That she wasn't wearing glasses.
impeach using the statute, then the only issue you're going to ask the jury is did she violate the statute? And here she admits she was, and then you go straight to causation. See it? So as soon as you've proved that you have an applicable statute and the statute was violated, you're going to end up in causation. Why allow the plaintiff to do this? So, think about it this way. Is the statute tort reform? Did the legislature say, we want to change tort law? Is that what the statute is? Because then we'd understand why it applies. Is that what the statute's doing? Or who's using the statute for what? So let's go back to our fundamental knowledge. What statute is it? You just told me a few minutes ago. So, whose world does that statute live in? Yeah, I heard it. It's a Blues world. It's a criminal statute. So notice, this isn't the legislature saying, we would like tort law to look like X, right? It's not a tort reform statute where the legislature has directed that tort law look a certain way, right? We're going to abolish products liability. We're going to introduce strict liability. It's not a statute that reforms tort law. Rather, it's a criminal law statute that says, don't do this. Everybody see it? It's a crime if you do this. So why are we using it? Who makes the decision? Let's try to start one. Who makes the decision to use it? The legislature, the court, who makes the decision to use it? The plaintiff's going to ask, do they get the final decision? Your Honor, I'd like to use the statute. No, so who? The legislature or the court? The court. So notice, negligence per se is a decision by the judge to borrow some criminal law. Right? That's what's going on. We're going to borrow criminal law to help us decide whether this duty breach. Why would we do that? Why would we borrow it? Why not stick with our lovely head? Just ask the jury what reasonable care is, right? Which is the whole route we learned over here. You say to the jury, hey jury, what do you think reasonable care is? Do you think it's wearing glasses? Do you think it's not? Do you think it's eating pie? Do you think it's not while you're driving, right? So that route. Over here we're going to go, oh, we're going to borrow the criminal statute. So why might we borrow the criminal statute? So, yeah?
Because the standard might have already been set for that action.
So the legislature has set a standard, right? When it says this is criminal, it's saying good or bad?
Bad.
So the legislature, and why would we respect what the legislature set? So you're exactly right. We like it if the legislature set a standard. Why?
Well, it's maybe it's not up to the reasonable person anymore. We've already got an overriding law for it.
There is a statute, but we're deciding to borrow it, right? So you're right. So why would we borrow it? You're absolutely right, because it sets the standard. So why? Yep.
It's a way of just expediting the process. You don't have to have the plaintiff prove that there was negligence. The fact that there was negligence per se is already proof of negligence. They were negligent in breaking another law.
Okay, so efficiency, right? Efficiency, right? It's really easy, simple. Hey, you violated the law? Yep, we're done. None of that risk, utility, 15 factors, man. This is like efficient. Excellent. Anything else?
The committees or subcommittees that make it more experts in that field so they have more knowledge of it.
Right, so we have expertise here. The legislature has studied this issue and they've thought about, is it a good idea to have people doing this? And they're like, no. So we may well have the legislature's giving an expert opinion. Okay? Anything else? There's one other reason, which actually you can see in note one, in Cardozo's famous opinion. So why is it, he says, nope, if there's negligence per se, we're going to use that. Yeah.
Tom relieves the plaintiff of the burden of proving the defendant violated common law.
That's what the, is that what it does?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, because it allows us a second route. Right, everybody see? It says it relieves the plaintiff of proving the common law. Plaintiff doesn't have to go through that duty breach. Now they've got another way. But why? That's the what. Absolutely. Why does he say that we should have negligence per se? Why shouldn't the jury get to do it? Yep.
Is it like Cardozo said that we already have like a standard of what people should be conforming to? It says, like, if the safeguards prescribed by law for the benefit of another, that he may be preserved in life or limb, is to fall short of the standard of diligence to which those who live in normal society are under a duty to conform.
So he says, look, we've already set this duty to which everyone is to conform, right? Through a democratic process, the legislature has gone ahead and said, this is the standard we think everybody should live by, and the jury can't go, oh, shucks, no. Right? Oh, shucks, no, I don't think so. So the jury has no dispensing power. Once society has adopted the standard and we've all agreed on it, the jury should be able to say, no, I don't think reasonable care really wants you to do that. So it's almost a democracy argument, right? Once the legislature has set the standard, we've all agreed to live with it. So that's the why we go ahead and do it, right? Because it's kind of an odd thing. Because remember, most of the time I'm like, keep that nasty Bluth hold out of there. Right? But now, in negligence per se, we're like, no, we'll use it. Okay. So what, when will we use it? So what kind of flavor of statute are we going to borrow? So that's the next question. So, what part of the statute did we borrow here? Yep.
We borrowed something that was designed specifically to protect a specific class of people.
Okay, that's not in this case. That's the next case. So hold the class of persons, class of harms. This case tells us something about the statute. So I'll give you a hypo. Maybe you get it. Suppose the defendant didn't have a license at all. She's driving without a license. Could we base negligence per se on the fact that she didn't have a license? And what does the court say? No. Why not? That seems worse than just not having the glasses on. So why is it we say we'll borrow a statute if it's about not wearing your glasses, but we won't borrow the statute if it says you need a license to do it? So it must be something about the statute that causes us to say we'll borrow one, not another. Yes, Ms. Craig.
For the hypo, it says that the restriction is placed on the license directly relating to the operation, while the license operating the vehicle, not the manner thereof.
And what does that mean?
It's saying that the restriction on the license is just kind of relating to the authority, where the actual restriction placed by negligence per se relates to how it's actually operated. So what the defendant is actually doing versus just an authority saying you can't drive.
So the licensing is just whether you can or can't do it. What does the restriction set for us?
How?
How? Did anyone notice the little quote at the top of the second page? Yep.
It's the statute sets up a standard of care.
It sets a standard of care, right? The only reason we're interested in Bluth World is if Bluth World gives us a standard of care. You may not drive without your glasses. That's a safety standard. So we're only going to borrow a statute that sets a standard of care. Whereas licensing is just to make sure we know who's on the road, right? It doesn't say drive carefully, drive fast, drive slow, right? All it says is get a license. So it's not setting a standard of care. And that's what we need. Those are the only ones we're willing to borrow. Everybody happy with the concept? Okay, so let's take a look at Bain, unless people had questions. Come down. Bain. Hey, that was an awesome job, Ms. Bowman. Okay, let's try and harass someone else. I don't know. Mr. Brower. What happened in Bain?
The plaintiff sued for personal injury since he was uploading guns at the defendant's platform, and he was employed by a trucking company, not the defendant.
Right, so he's like the UPS guy, right? Okay, and what happens to the UPS guy is he's making a delivery at defendant's place of work. So he must be trying to use negligence per se, otherwise the case wouldn't be in here. Okay, so the first question is, what flavor of thing is he trying to base negligence per se on? Is it a state statute? What is it? It's an administrative regulation, right? It's simply, it's not actually a statute in Washington. It's a regulation put out by the Department of Labor and Industry saying this is what your platform has to look at. So the first question that's asked is, can you do negligence per se off just a regulation? Right? Obviously, it's not a statute. It's not passed by a legislature. Just a little regulation. And what does this court say? Right, so they say you can. Did you notice a humorous little dissent? Why did the dissent say we shouldn't do negligence per se off a regulation?
Because some of them are unnecessary and they're making mouse and that's not to get this one.
And it would be better to force the plaintiff to prove what?
Just one way.
Right. He says, I don't want to make administrative regulation sufficient for negligence per se. I want the plaintiff to go over here and show that what the defendant did lacked reasonable care. Because there's too many regulations, they haven't really thought about them. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, you can see on page 368, the restatement second. What position did the restatement second take about with, over administrative regulations? Were they sufficient to trigger negligence? Right? See right there in that introductory language, right? Where the violation of a public law, meaning a statute or regulation, should be considered. So the restatement second, like this court, will accept an administrative regulation as a basis for negligence per se. Everybody happy with that first ruling? Okay. The second part of the ruling is about what? Let's victimize someone else. I've run out of people to victimize. Mr. Cox, I'm sure I've talked to you, but for some reason you're not highlighted. So can you tell me what you think the second ruling in this case is about? To use a statute, you have to show what? Bottom of 368 to 369. Okay, so who did the defendant argue the statute was designed to protect?
Just people that work in
town. And what does the court pick?
Anybody that's on the premises with permission to work.
How about the general public? Was the statute also designed to protect the general public from falling off platforms?
Yes.
No.
No. Yes, no. That's exactly what the court says. Actually, yes, no.
It's the extension and protection of regulations to the public generally is not before
us. We don't need to decide that one. That would be really hard and nasty. So we're not going to tell you whether it extends to the public because this isn't a member of the public. Okay. Everybody get that principle. Everybody good? Okay. Look at the restatement second, see it on 368. Where is the principle you just discussed? A, B, C, or D? In unison? A, see it? Right? The legislation has to be designed to protect a class of person which includes the one whose interests are invaded. So that's the part we were applying. That leaves us with BCD. So what does BCD, when unified, tell us we also need to look at? For negligence per se to run, the victim has to show they were in the class of persons it was designed to protect. What is BCD?
BCD talks about it has to apply, the regulation has to apply to the particular type of harm that occurs.
Bingo! Everybody see that B, C, and D simply describe in three components the harm. Right? It has to be the right interest, the right kind of harm, and the particular hazard. Now, you could memorize restatement two. Anyone find a nicer rule? They're like, nah, we don't like restatement two because it has four factors, and that's too much for our brain. So any other offerings in the notes, perhaps? I don't know what might come after restatement second. Restatement third, where is the restatement third? Which is the rule I suggest you learn just because it says the same thing, but in much less words. Which note has the restatement third? Five is the cute little note. So if you look at note five, there's the restatement third's provision, okay? So it puts the type of harm first, right? You can use negligence per se when the actor violates a statute that's designed to protect against the type of accident, or you could say the type of harm, the actor's conduct causes, and if the accident victim is within the class of persons it's designed to protect against. So that's that class of harms, class of persons inquiry. And that's an easier one to run than the long restatement second one. Everybody got it? Okay, now we actually have to apply it. We good? Okay, so let's try, what should we do? Let's try doing the notes in note seven and then we'll come back to Victor. So, note seven is actually the right sort of accident. Everybody see that's what it's headed, so it actually is looking at the class of persons, class of harms, which is it looking at in unison? Class of persons, class of harms. Class of harms. The right sort of accident, the class of harms. Okay, so what should we do? Let's do Chevron. That's one of my favorite. What did the statute say? What harm is it designed to protect against? What type of accident does it want to prevent against? Yep. That's not what the statute says. You've got the one that occurs.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yes, so the statute says you have to have what? You have to have a gas station attendant to clean up the gas. What happens to the plaintiff? Is that the harm they were designed to protect?
Yeah.
Why do you think they passed the statute? What harm were they worried about?
Fire.
Fire, explosions! Okay, my next favorite one, let's do cigarettes over sheep. Okay, so, wanna see, what did the statute say? What standard does the statute set? You can't do what? Yep. No, you said the right answer. Still hiding.
The violation.
What's the violation, wanna see?
You can't sell cigarettes to minors.
You can't sell cigarettes to minors. You can sell them to stupid adults. But you cannot sell them, that's my little anti-smoking plug, but you can't sell them to minors, right? So, what injury does the plaintiff suffer? What type of accident does the plaintiff suffer when defendants sell cigarettes to minors? Right, the kid throws away the cigarette, causing a fire burning down the lumber yard. Is that the type of accident the statute was designed to protect? What was the type of harm, you think?
Addiction.
Right, addiction, lung cancer, cancer of the mouth, emphysema, smoking bad, okay? Should I do more or are you Okay, everybody good with class of person, class of harm inquiry? Good? Okay, let's take it back into Victor then. Victor is one of my favorite cases. It's just so humorous. Everybody is fixated with their, like, tape deck or CD player. I'm like, get a grip, right? Okay, so I need the fact pattern and then we'll deal with the statute. Fact pattern volunteer. I think I've highlighted everybody. Okay, I'll do a new color. I don't want to be highlighted in the new color. It's an opportunity. You could be ignorant all week and I wouldn't be able to attack you. Oh, Mr. Hoffman's like, I want weak ignorance for the week. Okay, what happened, Mr. Hoffman?
Hedges was driving a car owned by Therm Tech. They were both defendants in the morning. And he was drove the car under the sidewalk to show the plaintiff his new CD player, or compact disc player.
Okay, yes, exactly.
Ooh, hey, you want to come down and see my seat in the trunk?
Okay, so the defendant parks his van right there, and he brings the plaintiff down to see this awesome CD player in the back of his car, right? Okay, and this and what happens thereafter?
The road that he pulled off of was under construction. It was very bumpy, and so Williams, which was another driver, was coming up the street, and he looked down to adjust his tape player.
Maybe we should just get them out of the car and no one would be injured, okay? He looks down to adjust his tape player and...
2 seconds, he said, and then he moved the wheel from side to side, hit the curb, blew out both tires, lost control, and hit the plaintiff.
Okay, now obviously the plaintiff sues Williams and Williams is liable. But that's not what we're concerned with, right? We're concerned with the plaintiff's suit against the defendant parked his van on the sidewalk. And then we'll work out why she's doing this. Yep.
Because she wouldn't have been on the sidewalk if it hadn't been.
Correct, but why do you think she's even bothering to bring this pretty stretchy claim?
Because it's against the statute to park on the sidewalk.
You're right. She's got some kind of argument, but just as a strategic matter, as a lawyer, what are you going to presume is going on? Bingo. So Thermotech is a deep pocket. See, it's their vehicle. So that's the deep pocket she's after. And we're also going to presume who has no money.
Yeah,
True Star.
Right. Will Williams, who actually takes her out, has no money, right? So she's not really going to recover sufficient from Williams. So that's why she's bringing an action against the defendant, because she really wants to get at the corporation. It's not that she hates him for showing him her. Him showing her his lovely CD deck in the back, right? That's what we're gonna theorize. Okay, back to law. Okay, so can you bring a claim in negligence per se and ordinary negligence at the same time? Can they answer in unison? Yes, because that's exactly what this plaintiff does. Okay, let's try negligence per se. What statute or provision is she trying to use? What is she trying to use? Yep. And if you were to predict, how many negligence per se cases do you think are based on the driving? Right. It's the vast use of negligence per se is going to be either it's worker conditions or it's the traffic driver, right? So if you think of any accident you've been in, you can probably point to a violation. They changed lanes without signaling, they didn't keep a clear distance ahead. So almost all auto accidents, plaintiffs are going to try and push them into negligence per se. Okay, and what was the provision that this defendant violated? Bingo. So does it set a standard of care for purposes of safety, do you think? Really? Why do you think they say don't park on the sidewalk?
Oh, so that pedestrians don't have to walk through traffic, or so that creates a bigger danger.
Right. So clearly, this isn't just a licensing statute. Get a license. It actually sets a standard of conduct for reasons of safety. So we now have. the plaintiffs. Which one do you think's easy? Class of harms, class of victims, or class of persons?
Which is easy here?
Easier.
Yeah, for this plaintiff.
So why is class of persons easy? Why do you think the legislature put this statute in place saying don't park on the sidewalk? What set of victims were they trying to protect? Pedestrians, right? It's pretty obvious. Don't park on the sidewalk because you could hurt pedestrians. So notice this was not even a litigation about whether she's within the right class of persons. Okay, class of harms. What harms does this court conclude the legislature was trying to protect against? What type of accidents was it worried about?
Could be any one.
Vehicular obstruction of pedestrian traffic on sidewalks.
So what does that mean? How might the pedestrians be harmed?
They would have to walk outside the sidewalk to get around.
So if she had walked either over here, climbing through dangerous bits all around there and got injured, they say that's exactly one of the harms the legislature's worried about. And it'll give me a different type of harm.
Walking into the
walking in, don't walk. You're texting, your evil child is shouting at you. You're not really looking because there's not supposed to be vehicles on the sidewalk, and you walk right into it. Okay. Anything else? So there's one other harm they clearly see. Yeah?
If the vehicle is parked on the sidewalk, push him, put in motion, get that first one on the sidewalk.
Bingo. So suppose they reverse up or they stop driving. They can hit a pedestrian, so we clearly don't want them driving over people when they start up. What harm do we have here?
Getting
hit. Yep. Car coming off the street and hitting the plaintiff sitting behind the car parked on the side.
Is that a type of accident we believe the legislation was passed to protect against?
No, it doesn't.
There you go. So the court says this is not the type of accident we were trying to regulate against. Okay, are you guys good? Because we're about to hurt your brains for 6 seconds and then we'll do easy stuff. What I could not tell you, and then a week from now you'd be like, I'm so confused. Okay, you ready? Take a deep breath. I am smart. That's why I came to law school. This should remind you of something. What does it remind you of?
Scope of risk
rule. In? Everybody see, this is feels like proximate cause. And so for those of you who had no idea of what proximate cause was about, but you fully understand this, just take this back, right? Just take this back. It's the same inquiry. What is there a right type of plaintiff? Foreseeable plaintiff, postgrad. What is the right type of harm? The risk roll. Okay? So if you got this, oh, I see. Right? I see absolutely why someone who was just coming to the factory to meet someone for lunch wouldn't be the right type of person. Then you now understand the first approximate cause. If you fully understand, right, that the type of harm suffered here wasn't the right type of harm, you have the risk rule down. So don't tell me you don't understand it, because every one of you understood it right here. You got it? That wasn't the bit that hurt. That was the revelation. You're like, oh, wow, I do. Okay, so how is the inquiry different? So who are we asking about in negligence per se? When we say the right type of person, the right type of harm, who are we focusing on?
For proximate cause, it's a question of foreseeability versus negligence per se. The legislature already set the standard.
So in negligence per se, we're asking about who?
The statute. If the legislature's statute was violated.
If the legislature, so, but we're trying to work out what the statute covers, so we're asking, did the legislature intend to cover this type of plaintiff, this type of harm. Okay? Everybody see, in negligence per se, that's our question. When they said, don't park on the sidewalk, who did the legislature intend to protect against what type of harms? Everybody see it? How do you know what the legislature intended? What's the first thing you look at and what's what they focus at in Victor? You look at the language of the statute. You read the language of the statute, and in some states you also look at
procedural history.
Right, legislative history to see if the legislature said, oh my god, there's 50 people being hit by walking into cars. It's a real problem in our town, right? So notice the inquiry in negligence per se is whether the legislature intended to protect this type of harm, this type of victim. And we look at the language, and then in some states you look at the legislative history. How is that different from proximate cause? Are we asking the legislature? Obviously not, because I'm trying to make a distinction. So anyone tell me who we're asking about?
Can we just go for the risk?
Did the defendant foresee a reasonable person in the defendant's shoes? Would a reasonable defendant foresee this type of harm and this type of plaintiff? So see how it's fixed in a different person. It's asking if the defendant, given their breach, would foresee harm to this plaintiff and foresee this type of accident. Got it? Are you happy? Because I'm about one last little thing. Because you realize when you get through here, negligence per se, where are you going next? If you pass it, where are you going? And what are you going to have to ask in causation? Cause and fact, actual cause, and proximate cause. And it's technically a different question, right? Because up here it's who did the legislature intend, and here it's who would the defendant reasonably foresee. You're going to get a very light analysis, right? But it's technically a different question. Anybody notice in our beloved case, Victor, how the parties actually tried the underlying case? How did they actually argue to the trial judge that plaintiff couldn't recover? Anybody notice what they did? So how was the case disposed of in the trial court? Bingo. So the trial court actually got rid of it on summary judgment on proximate cause. And this court says, I don't think you even get there because you can't get through negligence per se. Right? So you have to do both. Okay, one. We good? Let's just take a quick review of reasonable care because I kind of like it in this case. Okay. So 373 to 374, right? Because even though we've decided that the plaintiff can't go down the negligence per se route, the plaintiff can go ahead and try and go down ordinary negligence. So, what did the defendant do? What are we complaining about? Parked on the sidewalk and then run around.
Hey, would you like to see my trunk?
Right. Okay, so hard or easy? Affirmative act?
Yes,
right? So he lures her down to the sidewalk. He parks on the sidewalk and he lures her down, okay? So we have an easy duty. We have to decide breach. What's the first step in breach? Refine the standard of care. Anyone tell me where the court goes about explaining what the standard's going to look like in this case? The court explicitly refines the standard of care. What does it tell you about the standard of care? That it's running ordinary care. What?
Included on the top 373 there.
373, just on ordinary care, what did they say? It's the care of a average person in?
So in the community.
In the community, in those circumstances. They go, hey, breach, refine, we know the general rule. Reasonable person in the circumstances. And then they actually pull out one little refined sub-rule. By the way, you can take into account. They're not up to that yet. You can take into account when you run a reasonable person what? That first paragraph under ordinary care on 373, they say when you look at a reasonable person, in the circumstances,
superior retention.
You can take into account superior knowledge. So we're asking, what would a reasonable person, knowing what he knew, do? Did he take reasonable care given what he knew? Okay? And the next step we have to say is, did he actually breach? Right? What does the risk look compared with the utility? Okay, because first we always have to examine the risk posed by his existing conduct. And what does the court say, or I'm flipping the page, is the risk that a reasonable person should foresee? So what's the plaintiff arguing? What does the court say? So if a reasonable person says, hey, I parked my car on the sidewalk, you want to come down and look in the trunk, what does the court say?
They said that reasonable people wouldn't conclude from the facts that taking her to the sidewalk was an unreasonable risk of harm.
Absolutely. The court says, does that mean they breached or they didn't breach? They didn't breach. The court says no jury could conclude that bringing someone down to the sidewalk to look in the car poses an unreasonable risk of harm. But what about the fact that, you know, the expert testified that when you went along the road and you hit these bumps, you had a natural squirrely bias to the right taking them out? Doesn't that pose a risk? I mean, when this expert looks at the road, he says, look, it's in terrible condition, and when you hit these bumps, you're naturally going to tend to the right to take them out. Yep?
And they say that they can't judge him by the expert standard of care, they have to judge him by his own standards.
And what did he know? Does he know anything? He knows a few things. What does he know?
There's no evidence in the record that Hedges was aware of any prior accident.
He doesn't know of any prior accidents which would tell him as a risk. He doesn't know what the expert testified to about the natural bias, but he does know what?
That they act squirrely.
Like that it's bumpy and nasty. Is that enough to pose a risk of harm which requires him to take more care?
If he doesn't know that there's been any other accidents.
Bingo. So the court says you can't get through this side because you just can't get through breach. There is no risk that a reasonable person would have to take account of. Awesome. Okay, we're now doing clicker heaven for 10 minutes because it's that easy. So the first thing you should be able to do is, with a friend, fill out the order you think about this. So at this time in the year, you want to not only get information, you'd want to think about how you were going to organize or write about the information. So, issue spotting first. What would be present in a case or an exam question that would make you consider discussing negligence per se? Answer? A statute, right? Or an administrative regulation, or even a municipal ordinance, a city ordinance will do. Do not make up your own regulations, right? You may believe that there's a regulation against climbing trees. Do not make them up. Unless I give you a statute, there is no statute, okay?
How would that be expressly examined?
The City of Columbus has a statute which prohibits people changing lanes without signaling and slowing.
Okay.
Does the statute apply? So what's the first thing you gotta check, and what's the second thing? I want to tell me what A and B is. B-I-B-I-I. Yes.
Does it ask that the statute be a standard of care?
Bingo. You have to make sure it's a safety statute that sets the standard of care. Otherwise, we don't want it, right? If it doesn't even set a safety standard that sets the standard of care, it's not going to do us any good at all. Okay. B, ask if I.
Is the type of class of persons is designed to detect, and the type of harm is designed to detect?
Bingo. So you need to use note 5 to make sure you have a working rule statement. Class of harms, class of persons is usually too generalized. When you go to apply it, you get it wrong because you don't know what it means. So you got to have a rule statement that you can actually apply that says class, type of accident, class of persons. Okay? Yep?
Could you give us an example of a statute that wouldn't set a standard of care?
So for instance, you might have a regulation that said, in the city of Columbus, all lampposts have to be iron with frilly bits. And the reason they cast it is because they believe it sets with the ancient German decor, which originally was there. That's a statute, it sets a standard, but it's not about safety, it's about beauty. Right? So what you want to say is it giving us a safe, it's like custom. It's the same thing, it has to be a safety base, otherwise we don't care about it. So that would be an example I made up on the spot brilliantly. That's what they tell you in teaching. Never make one up on the spot. Okay. Okay, are we good? Are we on to 3? What do you need to know? Did, what is, wait.
Violate.
Did the tortfeasor violate the statute? If the tortfeasor did not violate the statute, you haven't proved breach. Okay, 3. Is the violation excused? We need a shopping list of excused violations. Where is the shopping list of excused violations? You can make your own up. Note 8, the third restatement shopping list of excused violations needs to be known. Right? And they're usefully headed A, B, C, D, E. Are we copying them in? Because you can't play the clicker game unless you copy them in. Or you just have any shorthand that tells you what they are. If you have your own list of them, that's fine. See them in note 8 on 380. A, B, C, D, E. Excuse violations. Even though you have violated the statute that properly applied, there is still no negligence per se if your violation is excused. Okay, we cover them all in? Or you can just play off note 8. Okay, what next? See where we are? Are you still copying? It's kind of sad. Just copy the buzzword. Yes?
For B, where it says including, what are we including?
These reasonable efforts by the defendant to comply.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what are we including?
Oh, you mean you want to know what they mean?
No, I want to know what should go in that blank.
Oh, I know what the blank is. Reasonable efforts to comply. When might you be unable to comply? Because you face a emergency. So an emergency is one of the scenarios you see where despite reasonable efforts, you can't comply. Because you face an emergency, not of your own making. Okay, now I know what you're talking about. Sorry, I added that in later. I'll be good. Because we have to play. Okay, what next? Suppose negligence per se succeeds, where do you go next? Causation, right? You're not done. You still have to do causation. Suppose negligence per se fails, where do you go next? Back and try the harder route. Back and try ordinary care. negligence per se isn't going to run, then you're also going to try and prove lack of ordinary care, just like they did in Victor. Okay, are you good? Okay, this is what you guys will get wrong. So we'll just try and click through. It's not hard, it's just you don't think about it until too late. So, question number one, A, B. Jack is driving on a street with no statutory speed limit. As he drives past the school, Jack hits a child in the street. The child is always fine, just a little squashed. Okay. Which of the following presents plaintiff's strongest argument for duty breach? A, reasonable care standard. B, negligence per se. Oh, it's just not showing. It's on. Click on. Sorry, I just didn't make it show. No. There it is. It was on all the time. I just didn't make it show. So you can check your own results. 24 of you! No, sorry! Yeah, but it's decreased because we only have 4 minutes left. Or we can stay late. That would be fine with me. Congratulations. Excellent. Good idea. Okay, A is the correct answer, right? You should be arguing the reasonable care standard because the statute is not... There's no statute, right?
No.
Okay, let's try the next one. Two, Jack is driving on the street past the school with a 25 mile per hour speed limit. He drives past the school at 30 miles per hour and hits a child in the street. Which of the following presents plaintiff's strongest arguments for duty breach? Reasonable care standards, negligence per se. Too slow, it's really easy. B is the correct answer. Okay. Three, take a look at three. Jack is driving on a street past a school with a 25 mile an hour speed limit. He drives past the school at 15 miles per hour and hits a child in the street. Which of the following presents the plaintiff's strongest argument for duty breach? A, reasonable care standard. B, negligence per se. There it is. But how can he be negligent if he complied with the speed limit? So can you lack reasonable care even while complying with the statute?
Yes.
Yes. And what note tells you that? Note 10, right? It says it is not a blessing on your behavior you can comply with the statute. You can still prove a lack of reasonable care, although compliance with the statute is evidence which can be introduced. Okay, number five. Oh, number four would be better. Sorry, number four. Jack is driving on the street past the school with a 25 mile an hour speed limit. He has a stroke and unable to control his body. His foot wedges against the accelerator as he passes the school at 30 miles per hour and hits a child. Which of the five excuses above is the strongest argument to avoid negligence per se? A, B, C, D, or E? But only 15 out of 26. Kind of sad. A, because it's what? Physical incapacity. Now, the real interesting thing is, what would you write? If you look at the topics above, 1, 2, 3, what would you write?
That under normal circumstances, he would be liable, but because he was physically incapable.
Much simpler than that. Would you write 1?
The violation is excused because he was physically incapable of...
So you'd go straight to 3?
Oh.
I don't think so. What would you write? 1. Then you'd write... 2. Then you'd write... 3A. Then you'd write... What's happened? Negligence per se has... failed. So what are you going to write?
Then you go up to the
ordinary care. Right, at that point, you have to look back up and write ordinary care. So So if that was the hypo you're dealing with, you go one, two, you actually go injury, one, two, three, A, negligence per se fails, back up, and do ordinary care. Okay, oh look, you're failing though. Okay, let's try and do five. Roll fast. Okay, five, Jack's driving down the street, mechanical failure, which he is unable, despite taking good care of his automobile, to either prevent or control, causes his car to accelerate to 30 miles an hour and hits the child in the street. Which of the five excuses is the strongest? A, B, C, D, E. And B is the five best ones. So that leaves you, notice, three that you haven't run. C, D, and E. Together or by yourselves, you need an example of each of them. Otherwise, you will be clueless about what they meant. Said you want to do it together right now?
Yeah.
Okay. And I want to give me a C, D, or E. One of them is a case and a note. Which one's Tedla? Yep.
Well, I was going to say, it's kind of weird. Maybe by not following the speed, if you followed the speed limit, you would hit more children. And if you sped up and violated the speed limit, you would not hit.
There you go. That's E. Okay. Our example in there is Tedla. It said you had to walk along one side of the street facing the traffic, but in fact, all the traffic was on that side of the street. So it was actually better to violate it by walking on the other side. So if you violate the statute, there's less risk of injury. So that's E. How about C? Justified ignorance of the facts, not ignorance of the law, because that is no excuse. Ignorance of the facts. Anyone come up with a hypo? Yep.
If it's a school zone, but it's not marked, it just became a school zone, and you were driving at 30 miles, and it wasn't marked as a 25-mile area.
Right. That one will do. Ignorance of facts. Okay. Another example would be your headlight has failed, but you don't know that it's failed because it only just failed, right? And if you
know it, you would have fixed it immediately,
right? But it's actually a violation to drive without your working headlights. Ignorance of the facts, right? Rendering the statute applicable. You just don't know. And notice it's justified ignorance. It's not my spells.
Well, I'll just ignore it. It may fix itself.
That's not justified ignorance. Okay, that leaves D, excessive vagueness. Right, excessive vagueness means the statute doesn't have a standard you can use. Right, so drive very carefully. You're like, well, you already have that over ordinary care standard, so that's nothing that we could borrow. So the statute itself just isn't explicit or express, so there's nothing we can borrow. Go your lovely ways, and notice, we have finished the prima facie case of negligence.